Mrs. Winslow Damon is being interviewed by Renee Garlick for Concord's Oral History Program. The interview is taking place at her home at 179 Prairie Street on November 4, 1977. Mrs. Damon is 84 years old. Mrs. Damon, do you recall the area divisions of West Concord?
Well, having read about them, I do know something of the divisions before it became Concord Junction. In the middle of the 19th century, the large cotton mill at the west end of town was purchased by Calvin C. Damon, my husband's great-grandfather. He later added looms for wool and successfully manufactured a popular woolen cotton flannel. It was called Dummett flannel. At that time, the area around the mill was known as Factory Village. The mill owned many acres of land, and the houses in which the workers lived were built by the mill, along what is now Damon Street, Coleman Street, and part of Main Street. In 1859, Henry David Thoreau surveyed the property, including the surrounding buildings, and labeled his map a survey of Damon's Mills, so-called in parentheses. On the wall of the branch bank at the Middlesex Savings Institution in West Concord in the shopping mall, you can see on the wall a duplicate of the same survey map, and Damon's Mills in great big letters, very easy to find. He did a great deal of surveying, of course. I have a photograph of that survey map of his, because the original is owned by a cousin. And the brick mill, if you look on the side of the brick mill, it has a stone inscription, Damondale. It was later called Damondale. While they had the mill, Mr. Damon and his son, Edward Damon, developed a library, which they had in the mill for the use of their workers, and accumulated quite a good collection of books. I have a list somewhere of the books in that library. They also used what they called their counting room as for church services and for Sunday school, and would have the ministers Concord take turns coming up on Sunday afternoon to conduct a service there for the people at this end of the town. They were very church-minded people. This area of town later became Westvale and had its own post office in the double house, which is still standing on Main Street, across the street from the mill. And my husband's father was the postmaster of that Westvale post office. In that double building also was Adams and Bridges grocery store, which was well known here because it later moved to the center of West Concord, where Joe Hayes shoe store and the Gale Mark store now are. It was a very popular store in town, one of the real old-fashioned country stores. The population of Westvale was mostly English mill workers. They'd come over from the woolen factories in England. The Damon Mill and their farm property, they also had quite a lot of farmland, reached almost to where the Derby Farm came west from the Assabet River. And the very old, rambling Derby homestead was torn down only a few years ago to make way for the present shopping center about along by the railroad and the river in West Concord. And besides the old family homestead, there was a more modern house which was the home of Benjamin Derby and his family. And Benjamin Derby for many years was the postmaster of the Concord Junction post office. His widow, by the way, is still living. She's almost 100 years old. Then another section, that was the Derby Farm. Beyond the Derby Farm was the Sheehan property, which was a big farm property, which now has been converted into Concord Green with its many townhouses and apartments belonging to the Pomos. The Pomos had bought the Sheehan farm and held it for a long time before they put in Concord Green. Another section of town was Warnerville. As you go from the Derby Farm over the railroad tracks to the present center of West Concord, Mr. Warner owned most of that property. He had a pail factory by the Warner's Pond, so named for him, where there was a dam holding back the Neshoba Brook to form Warner's Pond. And at that dam was his hat factory, and we always still called it the factory, Pail Factory Bridge, as the way you go over it from North Avenue. There was a hall named for Warner, Warner's Hall, which is upstairs over Joe Hayes' store in the Delmar, and that was where our women's club met when I was the president during World War II. That was named Warner's Hall. Previously to that, we had met in the Association Hall across the street, but the Association building was converted into a one-story building, and the top two floors were removed at that time.
It's where the post office is?
Where the post office is now, leaving just the post office. But at one time, there was a big hall on the second floor where all kinds of movies, silent movies were held. And on the third floor were the Oddfellows' rooms, and that was where our women's club met, climbing two long flights of stairs to get up there. From Warnerville, going along Commonwealth Avenue, we come to the reformatory section. And the reformatory section had what we called the white row and the green row. The white row was a row on Commonwealth Avenue just before you reached the reformatory circle of big Victorian duplex houses, high ceiling duplex houses. The reformatory workers could rent those for $12 a month. And the heat was furnished by steam pipes from the reformatory itself, so it was a very frugal way of living, but very fond people who lived there. The green row was in what is called Elm Place. It's on the north side of the reformatory going off Elm Street. Of course, there was no reformatory circle at that time. It was just Elm Street. And then Elm Street branched off to form what is now Route 2A, but we called it Great Road, which led to Acton and one of the Actons and Littleton Common. The other was, I think, called the Union Turnpike and was the present Route 2 going toward West Acton and eventually to Stowe and Harvard. In the early years, the reformatory was what it was named. It was a place to which younger transgressors were sent with the idea that they could be reformed. And they did everything in their power to really reform them. They had school, they had a superintendent of schools, they had a woolen mill section where they made blankets, they had a woodworking section, and really it did a great deal for them. And the reformatory officers at that time were among the most respected people in town, very different from the attitude now toward people who work in the state prisons. A great many of them built their own homes, some of the biggest houses on Main Street, and Commonwealth Avenue belonged to the reformatory officers. Their children were among the best dressed, they were sent to college, and they were the important citizens of the town, very fine group of people. Talking about the reformatory officers, three of their wives were the ones who founded the West Concord Women's Club. This is the 75th year of the founding of the club, which was started in 1902 by the wives of three reformatory officers. They wanted to promote educational, philanthropic, and social needs, and seemed to devote a great deal of their time to reading Ruskin. It met on the third floor of the old Association Hall, which has since been reduced to the West Town Post Office. And we have, since this year in our little West Concord newspaper, we have a purposeful past to emulate and preserve.
Thank you. Education has long been a special interest of yours. You had taught for a while at the West Concord School?
Yes, I did. I taught in the old West Concord building, which has since been taken down. At the time I came, it was very overcrowded. I was given a class in the assembly hall, and for part of the year we had screens between my third grade and the kindergarten class, which wasn't conducive to quiet learning. The following year I was in the basement looking around rally columns at my charges. But then the Howdy Wheeler School was built in 1918, and made ostensibly for little children. But when the older teachers of the older grades saw the beautiful auditorium, they were very envious and finally prevailed on them to move the 7th and 8th grades over into the new building, as well as the 1st and 2nd grades. And the rest of us stayed in the old building but used the facilities of the Howdy Wheeler School.
During what time period did you teach at the West Concord School?
I was there from September 1916 to June of 1922. And then at that time, as soon as you were married, you automatically left school teaching. But I went back to do some substituting after being married.
Was the Harvey Wheeler School considered a unique facility for its day?
It was a very unique facility. We had people coming from all sorts of places to view it, because it was one of the first one-story buildings. Before that, schools were always two or three buildings down. It was an attractive yellow stone, very attractive. It had a single door leading out from each classroom to the outdoors, so that for quick evacuation of children. Very convenient. And well, people were very interested in that type of school. It was an innovative type of building. The bell tower, well, I was going to tell this as I told about the different businesses in this school, about the Harvey Wheeler School.
You also served on the school committee.
Yes, I had 3 terms on the school committee, and which meant 9 years. And the last 5 of those 9 years, I was the chairman of the school committee. And during that time, we started the core nucleus of the Thoreau School and the Alford School. There had been no building of any kind since the high school on Stowe Street was built in 1929. And we built the heating facilities and the core of the schools to accommodate a future building which we knew they would need, but we built only as many classrooms as we needed at that particular time. A later school committee added an auditorium, a cafeteria, a gymnasium, and another wing of classrooms to make what we have now as the Federal and Public Schools.
And during what time period are you referring to on the school committee?
When I was on the school committee, 1942 to 1951.
Mm-hmm. So it was during that time period that
during
they,
that time that we built the Federal Alfred School. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall ice cutting around here?
Oh, yes. My husband's brother had access to the Haywood Mill Pond and had an ice house built at the dam, which is on Haywood Mill Road. And I can remember they're cutting with great saws, cutting the ice on the pond into great blocks and making a channel through which they floated the blocks down to the ice house. Then they would put them in layers with sawdust between the layers to keep them from melting. And I just happened to think that one of the reasons he could do that was that his business was a forester. He had a movable sawmill which he took around to different woodlots, so that he had plenty of access to sawdust. And then he would have his ice peddled by horse and team, and then carrying blocks of ice into people's houses. And the people would put their little card in the window to show that they wanted ice. And if it was up one way, it was a 10-cent piece. If it was turned upside down, it was a 25-cent piece. Mm-hmm. And the men who delivered the ice met all kinds of people. It was a sort of social.
Were strawberries and asparagus as big a crop in West Concord as in Concord Center?
Oh, it was a very outstanding crop. There were big farms here that had specialized in asparagus and strawberries. We have sandy soil, which is conducive to that growth of those plants. And it was very thriving until the Cape, which has a warmer climate and could produce them earlier, found that transportation had improved so that they could send them up to market in Boston before Concord's were ready to send. Mm-hmm. So that cut into the profits at the end. The earlier produce gets a higher price. And then with the developing houses and so forth, it took away some of the land so that they left the market for that sort of thing, but it was a very thriving business.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall some of the earlier businesses?
Yes, I've already spoken about the mill and the dairy farm. There was also the Allen Chair Factory in the center of town in what we've referred to as Warnerville. It manufactured mostly office furniture, desks and chairs, and Mr. Allen, who owned that, was a one of the first citizens of the town, very fine man. Then there was the harness factory, harness shop, you always call it. The one part of that is still standing and is the so-called the Harrell Block, mm-hmm. beside the Aspet River between that and Baker Avenue. And but the big main building was right flush on the main street, a great long two or three story, I think three-story building, and it belonged to the Harvey Wheelers. Mr. Harvey Wheeler Sr., the father of the Wheelers in town. They also built all the houses on Press Street and Cottage Street for their workers, and that was always referred to as Harness Shop Hill.
Oh.
And that was a very thriving business. Another business, across the street from where the Pail Factory was Winnie Chaplin's livery stable and blacksmith shop. And that was there even after I came to town. It was where E&S service station now stands, along the Sugar Brook.
Do you recall the Blueen?
The Blueen Factory. The building is still there, between the post office and the railroad track. Was a very, very thriving mail order business. They had discovered that they could put blueen for whitening clothes on sheets of paper. And they, by giving premiums, prizes for selling the most blueen, they had children all over the country selling their product. That caused the Concord Junction post office to be a first-class post office because it had such a volume of mail coming from the Blueen Company. Mm. Very thriving business.
You had mentioned you wanted to speak about the Bell Tower.
And speaking about the Harvey Wheelers, when the Harvey Wheeler School, which wasn't called that at that time, was being built, the Harvey Wheelers offered to build the clock tower as an addition to the plain mm-hmm. school building. And so with that, it became the Harvey Wheeler School. And the bell in that tower I've been told, was at one time the bell in the Damon Mill to call the workers to work. And for some reason it became lost for a long time and was finally discovered again and was put into the Harvey Bueller clock tower. And when talking about the bell, when the armistice news came to us at the end of the First World War, there was great excitement. And the girl who was the physical ed teacher and I climbed the tower of the Harvey Bueller School and rang that bell. We were scolded afterwards. We got fun doing it. It was great excitement. And, because, of course, we used to watch the troop trains going through here. You see, Concord, all these villages became a nucleus of Concord Junction. And it became Concord Junction because we had a New Haven, a New York, New Haven trains going north and south, crossing the Boston and Maine trains going east and west at Junction. So that became Concord Junction, and later West Concord. But the New Haven trains went from Lowell to Framingham to Fall River and connected with the Fall River boat for New York, which was a popular way to travel. The Boston and Maine went from Boston to Troy, New York, and Mechanicsville, and eventually to Montreal. Wonderful service on those trains. The Rideout Playground, which is now used by the Recreation Commission in the summer, was named for Percy Rideout, who was killed in World War I. He was a twin brother of Gertrude Rideout, the popular teacher in the High School of English and director of plays which the young people there put on. And she is now retired. Another person that you might be interested in was old Dr. Pickard. He was the country doctor who serviced this end of town. He went around first with his horse and buggy and then with his Model T Ford. He wore celluloid collars and pre-tied the foreign hands. He was a fine old fellow. And his sister, Elmira Pickard, married my husband's oldest brother. But Dr. Pickard also had a big farm. He divided his time between doctoring and farming. Over in the Sandburn School area, where now there is a road named for him, the Pickard Road, he had big farms over there. You might be interested in the fact that the flu epidemic of 1918 was so bad that the schools in Concord were closed for 4 weeks. During that time, I went back to Dedham, which was my home, and worked in the canteen there, and I can remember cooking gallons, I guess it was, of tapioca cream, because so many families had no one to cook for them. The mother, the father, the children were all ill at the same time, and particularly susceptible to that disease with pregnant women, a great many fatalities among pregnant women. It was a very horrendous time.
Thank you.